And I think we're going to see a little bit of a change at the very top this year. I think ODAC reigned supreme last year. They'll definitely be very good. They're going to be a top conference as well. But they had two teams in the final four, and I think three teams that finished in the final top 10 poll. So ODAC, I think, was the best league last year. This year, I think it's going to maybe swing back to the UAA. So this is definitely a conference I'm going to watch. It's like one of the most unique conferences in Division III as well, as far as kind of being all around the country with kind of big high profile institutions. But just looking at their teams this year in the preseason, Washington U from St. Louis and Emory from Atlanta, they both return a ton of talent from teams that were kind of top 25 caliber last season. We saw Wash U in the Sweet 16 last year. They were a good team and they bring back almost everybody. Combine that with Carnegie Mellon, who looks strong, NYU, Case Western Reserve, they always reload. I think that that's just going to be a strong league. I wouldn't be surprised to see them kind of back at the top of the conference rankings.
My boy, we're back with another episode, not even D2. We're recording on a Wednesday before this episode drops on Halloween. I know we both have scrimmages tonight, so just talk to me about how you're feeling going into today.
First of all, what's up, bro? Hope your day is going well, week's going well. Scrimmage tonight. We got a scrimmage against Union. Really, really, really good program. I mean, they have their well-coached team. They're pretty sure they're like a younger team. They had a lot of like freshmen last year who are now going to be like sophomores and maybe some rising juniors on there as well. I know your boy Tanner's on the team and he's a really tough guard. He's from Albany, right?
Yeah, he's from Voorheesville.
Word. Okay. Yeah. Nah. So I'm pretty sure he won like rookie of the year in the conference and like in the region. He won rookie of the year. So really good guard. So it's definitely exciting. We scouted them a little bit last night. So it should be a good scrimmage. Good test for us. What about you, bro? Who you guys got tonight?
Bro, we playing St. Bonaventure. So that's a Division I Atlantic 10 team. You know, they're tough, and that game every year is really exciting. Like it's pretty much sold out, and we're playing. That's like a crowd we don't usually get to play against. But a lot of times people ask, like, ooh, or when I say we're playing Bonnie, it's just like, ooh, that's tough or something. But to be honest, like, my mindset is never like I'm fearing the opponent. They play basketball every day just like I do. They put they tie their shoes the same way I do. I mean, obviously they're Division I players, but I'm not going into the game thinking anything like that they're way better than me or something. I'm always a competitor, so that's my mindset going into today. Even though they always smack us, you never know what could happen. So that's my mindset. But today we got a really big episode. We kind of crossover, not really, but we had the D3 DataCast boys on our show. Matt and Zach Snyder, they do a great job with their show, D3 DataCast. Definitely go subscribe to that podcast. They do a good job covering Division III sports. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the episode, but we're introducing a new segment. We don't have a name for the segment yet. So if anybody listening has a cool title idea, we're not looking for anything corny, some fire for this segment. We'll definitely be looking for that. But basically, what we're going to do today is two important questions for, you know, it could be about the Division III season. It could be about a specific conference, a specific team, player, anything. And we're going to both expand our ideas or give some questions, thoughts about this specific topic. So today, during the episode, we wanted to give our takes, but I feel like we gave them already. So we're not going to do it in the intro. We're going to kind of shift over to these questions. And since we were talking in the episode about the Empire expansion, that's the conference we both play in, I thought it would be cool. We start with two teams that are being added into the Empire, and we're going to do like a question for those teams, not necessarily like how are they going to be the best team in the league, but something worth thinking about for them going into the season. So I'll start, and I'm going to start with Brockport. And Brockport has a lot of expectations going into this year. They're only losing one player based off their roster, and Tyler Cowie, he was a fifth-year guy. They're having a lot their head coach is in his second year, so they'll be hearing the same guy for a second year that always does a lot for chemistry and other things regarding basketball. But my question for Brockport is they were from the Suniac, and the Suniac is, like, I'd say compared to us, a more fast tempo. They got more athletes in that conference. It's not as structured as the Empire Eight. And Brockport's one of those teams that has built their identity on getting after on defense, one-on-one defense, one-on-one on the other side of the ball too. They love to play at a fast pace, and playing against them back-to-back years, you definitely feel that in the game. They like to get up and down. So my question is, how does their style translate to the Empire Eight? I was looking at some of their stats. So they averaged just under 10 steals per game, and that would have led the conference in steals. So that's definitely one of their strengths. But something I noticed is their assist to turnover rate was 0.9, and that would have been in bottom three. Funny enough, that's in front of Alfred and Hartwick. But either way, that's not the greatest number for assist to turnover. So I'm really curious to see how Brockport kind of translates or shifts their style or identity to be one of the top teams in the Empire Eight.
Yeah, those are all great points. Hard to follow up that. But one question, just I have a quick question, really. So they brought in a transfer from Morrisville, Ja'Kai Lucas, and he was really good. I thought he was really good when we played against them last year. We lost to Morrisville, unfortunately, and he had a really good game against us. And I'm pretty sure he finished the year off pretty well. So I'm pretty sure he averaged 15.4 points a game, which is really good. So I'm interested to see how they fit in. I heard about another guard that they had from Rochester, Tony Arnold. He's a really good player from what I've heard. But I've never played against them. I watched their game last year, Alfred against Brockport. But again, they're kind of new, so I don't really know much about them. But I've just heard that, like you said, they love to guard, you know, press full court, guard one-on-one, and then they're going to attack you and get to the rim. You know, I was talking to my boy that played, they scrimmaged them. It was U of R versus Brockport the other day, and they scrimmaged them. And he said a lot of their points were coming from the paint. So, you know, that's how they play. And I'm just excited to see how they look.
Yeah. I mean, one matchup in the Empire that I'm definitely looking forward to is Utica versus Brockport, because I see a lot of similarities in the style of play. So that's definitely something I'm going to be looking forward to watching. And we love that Brockport's now in our conference. We love the competition. But now over to SUNY Poly. I mean, they're bringing back their two all-conference players. Chek Tor, who I've watched film on, he's OD. He averaged over 20 points per game last year. And Anthony Rose, who averaged 18 and 7 last year. So both really good players and really, really good years they just had. They're both back for this year for SUNY Poly. I think Chek was in the transfer portal, but I'm pretty sure that he's back this year. And they've been pretty dominant in the North Atlantic Conference. They were 29-11 the last 3 years, back-to-back-to-back runner-ups in the conference championship. But my question for them is, how quick can they adjust to the strength of schedule in the Empire Eight? And this is nothing against the NAC. The NAC has really good teams. I mean, you talk about like Poly or Cobleskill. I know that both of those programs are really good. They have high-level players. But I think it's pretty a consensus that people believe the Empire is a better conference than the NAC, and there's not going to be games where you can just, you know, you're lining up for Sage, and usually that'd be a lower team in the NAC, but now you're playing Sage, who's expected to have a really good year. So how can SUNY Poly adjust to the strength of schedule every night? You're going to be playing a really good team, and I noticed through their schedule that the past few years when they have played Empire Eight schools, they've been under 500. They lost to you guys and Sage in back-to-back years. So that's definitely going to be something I think that they can overcome, but it'll be interesting to follow how they get adjusted to that strength of schedule.
100%. Good point. I mean, Poly's a good team. I'm pretty sure they brought in a good amount of transfers this year too. I mean, first off, they brought in Damar Miller from Morrisville. Again, he was their starting PG last year. Again, Morrisville beat us, so he played well against us last year, but he's a pretty solid guard from Syracuse. And again, another transfer they brought in, I don't know how to say his full name, but everyone calls him Mark, and he's from Utica, Mark Merchant. He went to a JUCO out in like New Mexico, I think, or something like that, but he's a really good point guard. Everyone talks highly about him out here in Utica because he's from the area, so they tell me that he's a floor general, he can shoot it. So I'm interested to see how the transfers kind of affect their team and how they have basically three guards with Mark, Torre, and Damar now, and how they kind of compete in the Empire Eight. So definitely excited to see what they look like this year.
Yeah. I mean, those are definitely great, great additions to Poly. And this is just making the Empire Eight a really, really good conference, which we talk about in the episode. And if you like that segment, definitely give us some suggestions on what we can call it. We're interested. But back to the episode with the D3 DataCast guys, this was a really fun conversation with them. We talked about like Division III as a whole, but basically the basis of this episode was I texted them to provide the most interesting stories or teams going into the 2024-25 season for men's basketball. And they're really, really smart guys that know a ton about Division III, and they provide a really good insight, you know, just about the landscape of Division III, but also what we should be watching for. And there's a ton of storylines that we can follow throughout this year. So make sure that you're staying up to date with D3Hoops.com. They provide top 25 stories, all of that. So definitely stay alert with Division III basketball this year. I know that it's starting to build its narrative, but we got to keep growing that because it's definitely a top-tier division.
100%, yeah. And it was a great conversation, bro, just talking about different conferences in Division III. And it's honestly conversations that you and I have over text, you know, texting back and forth about different teams. So to have that conversation with them was cool. And especially talking about specific teams, too, and, like, some of the teams and conferences that I brought up, like, they were thinking too. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm pretty sure I brought up the NUMAC and talking about the NUMAC and how loaded of a conference that is. And as soon as I said that, Matt was like, oh, yeah, like you know what I'm saying? So I thought that was pretty cool. And, yeah, it was a great conversation, bro, and it was great to finally link up with them and do a little crossover episode.
Yeah. One last thing I want to say about them is, you mentioned this, but they always show love. And at first, when I first made the podcast, I was kind of surprised. Like, we're covering the same thing. You might think, like, oh, those guys are trying to take my spot or something. But it was never that. And that's something about the division as well. But I really appreciate the Snyder brothers and everybody in Division III community. But let's get into the episode and hear from the Snyder brothers. And if you're watching on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. We definitely appreciate all the support. We're continuing to grow day by day. Go follow our socials at Not Even D2 to stay up to date with what's going on with the podcast and other sporting content, and enjoy that.
Make sure you like that video too. Don't forget that.
Yeah, that's a fact. Go like that vid. But let's get into the episode. We are here with the Snyder brothers, the host of the D3 DataCast. First time we got four people on air together. So this is actually a wonderful feeling. So how you guys feeling today?
I'm doing great. Love the show. Happy to be on. I've listened to just about all of your episodes. The ones I haven't listened to yet are in my queue. So happy to be joining you guys. Yeah.
Yeah, not officially a crossover episode, but I'm glad we're getting together, and definitely been checking out what you guys have been going on, and just keep up the good work.
Appreciate you guys. You guys have been showing a lot of love too on the socials, and that goes a long way for just building our own brand and also building the D3 community. So we really appreciate seeing that type of stuff. I just wanted to say that to you guys.
Yeah, I think we really try to take a more the merrier approach. It's not like there's that much D3 content out there. So someone could definitely consume all of it and, you know, not have to worry about picking and choosing. So we don't really look at anyone as competition. Not that that's our approach anyway, but the more the merrier. You guys are putting out good stuff. I feel good about what we're doing. A lot of stuff out there, Hoopsville, everything on D3Hoops.com, Bob Quillman's QCast. So, you know, the pool is as deep as ever. And from our perspective, we want every fan to be checking all of them out.
So, I mean, I've been listening to the D3 DataCast. Likewise, you guys supporting us. I'm supporting you guys. I listened to Football MPI this morning. It was a good episode, and the Calvin episode with the head coach. So definitely keep up the good work. But I'm kind of interested to hear, like, if you guys got anything special planned coming up, and if you give us a little sneak peek with that.
Yeah, Zach, what do we have coming up next week? We're starting, like, our in-season shows. So each week we pick, like, top five games of the week. We like make our own picks against that, kind of like you see on ESPN Game Day. Maybe they're making their picks. We try to do stuff like that. Our week one show in like 2 weeks, we make some bold predictions for the season. We try to make some hot takes. In general, Zach and I don't get too hot takey with our show, but we try to have a little bit of fun early season. And then I think I don't know when this episode's going to drop here, but late October, early November, we like to highlight like our best 50 games in the early season, November. So we have that episode rolling out too. So across Division III, I think there's so many good basketball matchups between conferences, between teams across the country in November in early season tournaments and like that. So we like to highlight 50 really good games right off the bat for D3 basketball fans to watch.
And our schedule throughout the season is we have a new episode every Monday morning. Usually we're putting that together Sunday night, but 8:45 a.m. Eastern time. On our YouTube channel at D3 Datacast is where we'll be every week.
Yeah, so if you're listening, definitely go get all their episodes Monday morning. I listen to a lot of them, and it's great listens. If you're trying to get into Division III sports or understand, you know, how playoffs work, anything of that nature and what they're talking about, they do a great job. So definitely go get that. But we're here for, you know, it's basically your guys' floor on what you guys want to talk about. So I just texted you guys saying if you guys want to hop on the pod and do like the two most interesting or important stories / teams. So, I mean, you can definitely take that in a lot of different areas. And Ruta and I are going in blind hearing what you guys have to say. So I'll start with Zach on, it's not necessarily, just for a little context, not necessarily the best team or the best storyline, just something that's interesting or intriguing toward for you guys. So start with Zach and we'll talk about that.
All right. Matt and I did coordinate a little bit just to make sure we weren't going to be duplicating anything. So we have a storyline or something to, you know, to watch, like, you know, big picture wise in Division III basketball this season, and then a team to watch. So I'll start with kind of my big picture thing. And that's just how many conferences out there that I think have at least like four or five contenders heading into the season. There's a lot of conferences that have really wide open races for, you know, probably four or five teams that if any one of them won the regular season conference championship, I wouldn't necessarily be surprised. So a lot of really interesting conference races going to be going out there. So let me just run through because I had to actually make my list to make sure I had, you know, like four or five teams.
I like it.
Let's start out in California, the SCIAC, always a good conference. Right there, I'm looking at Cal Lutheran, Pomona Pitzer, Redlands, and Claremont Mud Scripps. All, I think, are going to be contenders heading into the season. Down in Texas with the American Southwest Conference, you know, there's been a lot of conference movement down in Texas. So the ASC is down to five teams, but I think four of them are legitimate contenders for the conference championship there. Hardin-Simmons, Mary Hardin-Baylor, Letourneau, and East Texas Baptist. And the one not mentioned there is Howard Payne, and people I've talked to think Howard Payne will be better than they were a year ago. So a lot to be figured out there in the American Southwest Conference. Up in kind of like the Iowa area, the American Rivers Conference, Nebraska Wesleyan returns a bunch. They're going to be in the mix. Loras, Code, Dubuque, and Central were part of a five-team picture last year that was really competitive at different times late into the season. All five of those were in the mix, even for like an at-large bid. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's going to be a similar picture, at least in terms of all five being able to compete in the conference championship picture there. The Centennial, kind of similar with a four-team mix of Swarthmore, Johns Hopkins, Gettysburg, and Franklin and Marshall.
That's a tough conference.
That is a tough conference.
And then, you know, you go to the NJAC. It's always competitive at the top. Again, Rowan, TCNJ, Stockton, Montclair State. And then Ramapo was a team on the rise last year. Could be a fifth team entering in that mix in the NJAC. And then, of course, there's the ODAC, right? And they've been kind of head and shoulders above, at least last year, always one of the top conferences. And part of that is just the depth at the top. Of course, Randolph-Macon, Guilford, and Hampton-Sydney were real strong a year ago. Virginia Wesleyan was also an NCAA tournament team. Roanoke, I think, is a team that like the last couple of years has had a hard time like winning against those other teams I just mentioned to really put themselves in that top tier of the ODAC. But if they can start doing that, they're going to be right there. And then we just talk about the depth, maybe not necessarily like contenders for the regular season conference championship, but there's other teams. Washington and Lee, Bridgewater and Ferrum have shown an ability over the last couple of years to be competitive against some of those top teams. So really interesting picture in the ODAC, as it always is. And then in the Heartland Conference in Indiana, primarily the HCAC has Anderson. I think they've been sort of head and shoulders above the rest of the league, but there's some transfers out of that program that I think maybe they come back to the pack a little bit. And then, you know, waiting there is Hanover. Manchester was the coach's pick in that preseason poll that just came out, in Transylvania. So there's four teams who could be in the mix in the HCAC. Now here's where I'm going to throw it back to you guys, because I think we could talk about the Empire Eight in this context too. You know, Utica's had the lock on that conference the last couple of years, but Nazareth and St. John Fisher are always in the mix. Brockport gets added right in the E8. I think that right there is an automatic fourth team that could be competitive there. And you can't write off Alfred, right, KJ?
Yeah, you can't. No, you can't. You shouldn't. So yeah, I'll start with the E8 because that's definitely an interesting topic we got to talk about. I think that, you know, the Empire 8 right now, I listened to the conference rankings that you guys had. It was kind of like mid-tier conference, but I think that adding Geneseo, Poly, and Brockport, that's now going to make the Empire 8 like a top. Either way, it's going to increase the Empire is what I'm trying to say. I don't know a number, but I think it's going to be in the top, you know, 15, 20 conferences in the country. And like the Empire 8 last year was really competitive. I mean, Utica beat us in the semifinals and it was a really good game and they ended up winning the conference tournament. But now you're essentially adding three playoffs teams because Geneseo and Brockport historically have been good. But even last year, they both were in the SUNYAC, and then SUNY Poly in the conference they were in, they were also back to back in the finals. So you're adding three really good teams into a conference that was already pretty good. So now I think that people are going to start talking about the Empire a lot more.
100% KJ and Zach, that's a great point. And I was wondering, honestly, if you were going to bring up the EA, I was like, damn, do I have to bring this up? Because
yeah, I knew who I was talking to. I had to wrap it up with the EA here, right?
I love it. I love it. And like I said, you're making a great point because like you said, Alfred's coming back this year. You guys had a really good squad last year. And I know that chemistry is a big part of basketball, right? Then you always have Fisher, who's historically a great program. We always know, KJ, you know how I feel about Naz. They're a great school. A lot of great players there, right? And then, like you said, you're adding SUNY Poly, you're adding Brockport. So it's definitely be competitive, and that's something that, you know, we keep on our minds out here that keeps us motivated. But I'm definitely excited to see how the E8 shakes out, honestly, because it's going to be a great regular season, and I know you guys are going to do your thing out of conference too. But one conference I wanted to bring up, though, to you guys, and I was wondering what you guys thought, was the NUMAC. The NUMAC has a lot of great teams in that conference, and I think they could have, like, five or six teams, you know, over that like little like 18 win like margin mark, because if you think about it, you have Babson, you have Clark. I'm going to bring up Clark later in the discussion, but Clark Emerson is a really great program. Springfield brought in some new transfers this year. WNE has been really good in the last couple of years, and WPI. We all know about WPI is a really good program as well. So I was wanted to hear your thoughts about the NUMAC and where they could kind of fit in this top conference rankings or just storylines overall.
Yeah, historically, always a strong conference, too, like right at the top. I think I'm pretty sure I saw WPI being voted in top 25 ballots by some people, Babson in that mix as well. You know, that they're always strong. It's for me, it's a conference that's really tough to pick. Like we did an episode, Conference Champions Draft, where we went around to pick
that was fun.
One of the leagues. It was one of the leagues I was like, I don't really know what's going to happen here at the top, because they're, like you just said, you named off, that's another league where there's three, maybe four teams that are definitely in the mix where you would not be surprised if they won the conference championship and then going into their conference tournament, right? Anything else can happen. The team that wins the conference tournament might get bounced in a semifinal or something early round. But definitely looking at WPI, definitely looking at Clark. We highlighted some of their games when we just recorded our top 50 games in November. I think they always schedule tough in the non-conference as well. And then what Babson can do this year. So like those three at the top are definitely three that I'm looking for, but that's not the entire mix either in that conference. I think that it runs deep every single year.
So that's a great start, Zach. I appreciate that. There's a lot of, I think that's another interesting conversation, but I don't want to make it too long about just why there's so much like competitive balance in Division III and across the country at that. So we might need to spend back on that, but I'll hand it over to Matt on what's your storyline or team that you're going to talk about.
Yeah, for a storyline, I'm going to kind of stick with the conference theme. One of the episodes we had kind of mentioned that we like to do every single year is kind of power ranking the conferences or do kind of a tier list. And I think we're going to see a little bit of a change at the very top this year. I think ODAC reigned supreme last year. They'll definitely be very good. They're going to be a top conference as well. But they had two teams in the final four, and I think three teams that finished in the final top 10 poll. So ODAC, I think, was the best league last year. This year, I think it's going to maybe swing back to the UAA. So this is definitely a conference I'm going to watch. It's like one of the most unique conferences in Division III as well, as far as kind of being all around the country with kind of big high profile institutions. But just looking at their teams this year in the preseason, Washington U from St. Louis and Emory from Atlanta, they both return a ton of talent from teams that were kind of top 25 caliber last season. We saw Wash U in the Sweet 16 last year. They were a good team, and they bring back almost everybody. Combine that with Carnegie Mellon, who looks strong, NYU, Case Western Reserve, they always reload. I think that that's just going to be a strong league. I wouldn't be surprised to see them kind of back at the top of the conference rankings this season. And just always talking about the UAA, one thing that makes them so unique is the teams that finish at the bottom half of that conference could compete in the top 25% of Division III still. So I wouldn't be surprised 100%. At the end of the year, if you get eight of these UAA teams and they're all maybe like top 50 teams in Division III, definitely top 100. I think there's a lot of conferences out there that these bottom three teams in the UAA could win. And it's one of these competitive and top heavy, well, not top heavy, but everyone's kind of in the top of Division III leagues. Yeah. Anyone can win. It's they play that this unique weekend schedule because they're kind of flying all over the country to play these games. The road teams always struggle, so you get some crazy results. So just kind of watching those top conference dynamics, I think we're going to see a little bit of power shift from the ODAC, still be a great league, and it's going to maybe tilt a little bit toward the UAA, and we're going to see a bunch of those teams probably enter the NCAA tournament come March.
Yeah, that's a great insight. And one thing I was always curious about, like, because a lot of the teams in the UAA, they get like good transfers year to year. I was wondering if that's like an appealing aspect, like you're going to be flying around the country, because as a student athlete, I don't think that I would really flourish in that type of environment where I'm on a plane every other week. But for, you know, a grad student or something like that, that might be an appealing factor that I just wanted to bring up. But also about the UAA, I think that there's a lot of similarities, and Ruta might disagree with me on this, but I think that also can be said about the NESCAC, that a lot of those bottom teams could go to like these mid-tier conferences and win the conference. So I like that you brought that up for sure.
100%. I mean, to talk about the NESCAC a little bit, I mean, we know that's a powerhouse conference every year, right? They have so many great teams. Great coaches, great players. But yeah, and like you said, the UAA is definitely a great conference too. And I like the discussion you're bringing up about, you know, being a student athlete and not thriving in that environment, because like, it's an interesting point, because it's like, you have to do your homework on a plane or you have to fly, you know, it messes up your schedule a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering if, you know, Matt or Zach had any other points that they wanted to add to that.
I mean, I just know as a student, I was not an athlete, but how much homework I was doing on the weekend. And if, in January and February, you're having conference play, and every Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you're flying somewhere, playing two games, flying in between cities and coming home. Like, I don't know how you get all that done. And those are strong academic schools.
Really, I think that's
putting it mildly. Yeah. So like they have to carry the load. I don't know if it is different with a grad dynamic. And I think you bring up a great point about those being attractive graduate schools for like fifth year eligible players. I think that's also another just interesting storyline for this year. This is kind of the last primary year of that fifth year eligibility, kind of the COVID year hanging on. So I wonder that's going to be a strong league no matter what, but you probably will see these schools, these teams getting fewer grad transfers to play basketball next season. So it's maybe a little bit of a last hurrah for some of those teams that have been doing like grad transfer reloads.
Yeah, right. And the other thing is, I also really like the point about bringing in the grad transfer, right? At that point, you've had 4 years, you know what is expected of you as a college student, right? You're not making that transition. Mm-hmm. I can imagine how it would be much more difficult for a freshman, but by the time you're a grad student, maybe you've got those habits established. You're not thinking, oh, you know, it's just going to be like continuing on high school. No, you got to, I know I had to make an adjustment as a college freshman to how I, you know, acted as a academically as a high school student. So yeah, maybe going in for a year, it's not that big of a deal for someone who knows the college routine, has those good habits established. And as Matt said, this is the last year where that free fifth year of eligibility because of the COVID year cycles out. So that's going to be, I think, a storyline to watch next year for what that means for some of these UAAs who have really thrived with being able to reload year over year with those fifth year guys.
100%. Someone like Coach McGinnis, who his identity is surrounded on going after those you know, grad transfers. It'd be interesting to hear how that changes now that there's not that influx of grad transfers coming into different schools. But all right, so you guys both mentioned that you got a team that you're going to talk about. So I'll let either one of you go, whoever wants to start it. We started with Zach, but if Matt, you want to go, you're free too. So let's hear this team that you guys are going to talk about.
I'll let Zach go again because I just talked a lot here.
Yeah. Okay, so the team I want to highlight is Christopher Newport. Right. Mm. 2 years ago, they won the national championship. They entered last year the preseason number one for good reason. You know, the roster mostly came back intact. But by the end of the year, that roster looked completely different. I don't know all the dynamics that took place, but, you know, some important guys who are on that national championship team and who are on that roster at the beginning of the season were no longer there. And yet, turning that over mid-season and relying on a lot of contributions from young players, Christopher Newport was still there at the end of the year, you know, playing for a return trip to the Final Four.
That's wild. And,
right. So they enter this year. I think voters really took note of that. And, you know, Christopher Newport's had a great program for a long time, but, you know, from the outside looking in, not knowing everything, I tell you what, that's a heck of a job John Krikorian did a year ago to be able to weather whatever was going on internally, to put really young players for the most part out on the team and still out on the floor and still be there playing for a Final Four. Just a really incredible story to follow last year. And now here they are, very highly rated in the preseason poll coming into this season. And so once again, with a bunch of players who maybe unexpectedly proved it a year ago, coming into this season.
Yeah, you mentioned their coach. How do you pronounce his last name?
Krikorian.
Krikorian. Yeah, I mean, I really think, I'm just watching some of their games, I think he's one of the best coaches in Division III, and his resume speaks for itself. Christopher Newport is always one of those teams you have to pay attention to that could shake up a bracket. Like, I don't think it was talked about that much them in the tournament, but like they were upsetting teams and they were there at the end, and that's all you can ask for as a college basketball team. So I definitely like that shout.
I was gonna I actually have a couple of teams I wanted to bring up if you guys don't mind.
Go ahead.
But the first team I wanted to mention was Clark University. I mentioned them when I was talking about the new Mac, but Coach Sims has built a really great program over there. I mean, they lost in the conference chip last year to Babson. And I'm also going to bring up Babson too after this. But the first thing about Clark, I mean, they have a really good squad. They're bringing back Isaiah Taylor, who was their starting guard for them last year. He's a great player, two-way guard, can shoot it, can make plays for them. They're bringing back their forward, Kekoa McCardle, who was like an all-conference player for them, if I'm not mistaken. And they're bringing in a Northeastern transfer, Kyle Squires. Now, this kid, like, I've seen him in person, and he can shoot the pill. Like, he is a great shooter. Mm-hmm. He transferred from Northeastern. He played at Northfield Mount Hermon. He's one of those guys, like, if you guys remember Ben Callahan Gold from last year, you know, one of those transfers that transferred from D1 to the NESCAC and just made an immediate impact to that team. I really feel that Kyle can do the same thing the way he shoots the ball. And then, like I said, Babson, I mean, Babson's a national powerhouse. We know about Babson, but they're bringing in two transfers. Our guy, Alex Stoddard from Williams, who's
player. That's tough.
Yeah, he's going there, and they're bringing in a Brown transfer, Felix Kloman, who started some games at Brown, who made it to the Ivy League championship last year, right? So they're going to be a really good team, and this brings up this, you know, conversation about the grad transfers and the impact that they have on Division III currently. And then the last team that I wanted to bring up, Guilford. Guilford was the last team I wanted to bring up because they just got a transfer from a school down in North Carolina, Division I transfer, I think a 6'7" wing. Mm-hmm. And they made it to if I'm not mistaken, to the Final Four. So obviously we know about them, but regardless, they bringing in a Division I transfer is obviously going to help them win games. So those three teams I'm looking at.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting dynamics. So I am one of the voters in the D3Hoops.com top 25 panel. So I get a ballot every week. And in the preseason, combing through the lists of transfers that we hear about and then later finding out some that maybe we didn't hear about, you try to insert that into what you know about the team already. And some of these teams like Clark and Babson have had success last season, and historically Guilford we saw in the Final Four. So you see, like, they're losing a bunch of guys to normal graduation, things teams deal with all the time, but then maybe they're getting a D1 guy. Like, this guy was a legit rotation player and scored points for D1. And so now you have to figure, well, what's the impact they're going to have on D3? They're probably going to be a pretty good player right away. I think that's been a really interesting dynamic for these last 3 or 4 years. And we kind of talked about that transfer thing, just guys that can come in right away and make an impact. And this being maybe one of the last years, but that is really difficult for me as a top 25 voter. Cause you're trying to make that assessment of like, what are these transfers going to come in and do? And you figure a guy coming from D1 to D3 is probably, going to play at like a starter level or maybe an all conference level right away, depending on if they were a D1 contributor or not. So I think those dynamics are always super interesting. I think the teams and players that you mentioned are ones that are all on the national radar, right? Like Guilford and Clark and Babson, they've been in and out of the top 25 polls and they're teams that we expect to be successful this year. So seeing D1 transfers coming to programs like that always makes you stop and think like, man, this team has a chance to go on a pretty good run this year if everything comes together. You never know how kind of like a fifth year coming in is going to gel with the team, if it's going to, they're going to do the same things they want to, but we know that they're good basketball talent. So interesting teams for sure. Yeah.
And I really like Clark as a team to watch. They've been a program on the rise and I think quietly took a step forward last year. And I say quietly because they played some high level games in non-conference play and, you know, came up on the short end, but played competitively, like out in Las Vegas against Trinity, Texas, and I believe Case Western Reserve, you know, where, you know, they played competitively. If they get a win in one of those games, suddenly probably a lot more people are recognizing the trajectory they've been on and, you know, don't be surprised if they take another step forward this year.
Yeah. Just to spin back on the CNU, Christopher Newport aspect, I was looking, we're going to tell how good they are. They got a really tough schedule. They're playing some UAA teams, some ODAC teams. I see John Hopkins right here. So their schedule's loaded. And I mean, they got the university to do that. Just a really competitive overall history. So that's a great shout. And then lastly, Matt, what team are you looking at?
Yeah, I'm going to go right to the top of my top 25 ballot. I think they came in at number 2 in the preseason poll that was just released by D3Hoops.com. But I'm going to go talk about Wisconsin Platteville. And they're exactly the type of team that I look for to rank highly to start the season. They were excellent last year. They were in the Elite Eight. They got knocked out playing a road game at Trine. We saw Trine go on to win the national title, and how they lost that game was an overtime buzzer beater. So they were right there at the end in the Elite Eight with Trine. But they return a ton of talent on that team. I think over 90% of their minutes played returns, over 90% of their points played for a team that was on the doorstep of a Final Four. And they're led by Logan Pearson, who's coming back for his fifth year eligibility. I think he's certainly one of the best scorers in Division III. He was a D3Hoops.com first team All-American last year. The NABC named him the D3 Player of the Year last year. Over 23 points per game, over 40% on his three-point attempts. I think UW-Platteville is loaded. They're playing a difficult, testing non-conference schedule. They play in the Wisconsin Conference, the WIAC, which is one of the most difficult leagues out there. So they're going to be tested come March. I think they were tested last year, bring a bunch of people back. And I think they're a team that I expect could be right there in Fort Wayne in the Final Four. Obviously, anything can happen. That's why we play the games. We see the season go. But right from the start, UW-Platteville is a team that I'm watching and I think could make a lot of noise nationally as well.
Yeah. You mentioned how, like, they lost on a buzzer beater. It's kind of crazy how, you know, if one little thing doesn't happen, like if that shot doesn't go in, who knows who would have been the national championship last year. But also they open with Calvin, your guy's alma mater. Yeah. So that's definitely going to be on your guys' radar. And I wanted to quickly throw it back to you guys. Like, so they obviously play in the WIAC, which, like you said, is a really tough conference. How does like the NPI kind of factor that in, like, because obviously there's conferences that aren't as strong as the WIAC and they have to play those teams every night in conference play. So how does the NPI decipher that sort of dynamic?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see this year because it's the first year where we're going to watch it all season long as the NPIs get calculated, right? The new selection metric the NCAA has come up with. But when you talk about a conference and that conference dynamic, because you're always going to get a winner and a loser every single night in conference play, kind of by definition, but kind of how those numbers end up getting set, just the way the math will work, is how do these conferences do out of conference? So when the WIAC is playing a team from the Northern Athletics Conference or the Midwest Conference or the CCIW or the MIAC, conferences around them who they'll typically play a non-conference play. If those conference teams all do well in non-conference, then their NPI ratings will all kind of rise together. And then even when you win and lose in conference play, it takes into account how well you do kind of nationally. So it'll be those non-conference games that are really big for your league to almost set the bar for how high your league's NPIs can go in a manner of speaking, right?
Yeah, that makes 100% sense. And I know I kind of cut the team that we were focused on UW Platteville. So I'll open the floor to anybody who's got extra thoughts about Platteville.
Yeah, one thing I would add, Matt, you mentioned Logan Pearson. I think he probably enters the year, I don't know if you would say like national player of the year favorite, but definitely in that mix of, you know, guys that you would mention. So you look at their accomplishments over the last couple of years, what they bring back. And, you know, I know it's a team game, but anytime that you can have the best player out on the floor on your side, you know, that's a huge advantage. And he's definitely going to be in that mix for national player of the year, which, you know, by default means a lot of times they're going to have the best player on the floor.
Yeah. I mean, that is a really good conversation we just had with you guys. We appreciate the work you guys do for the division, but also this episode. So that's really big time by you guys. We're going to keep following the D3 Datacast and all you guys putting out. Keep doing what you're doing. Great stuff coming out of there. If you're listening, go subscribe, follow their socials. If you want to plug your personal socials, you can also do that. So I'll let you plug that in.
Yeah. Yeah, in addition to at D3 Datacast, I tweet at FFTMAG. That's Forever Faithful to Maroon and Gold, which is just like repping it. Calvin a little bit. So yeah, I try to post some stuff, a lot of Division III stuff. I obviously like to dive into the numbers and the data and like tournament projection types of things. So that's what I like to do, and I do that mostly on social media on Twitter.
And on Twitter, I'm at Zach Snyder, ZACSNYDER. If you throw the K in there on Zach, you'll get the movie director. And sometimes people forget that, and they're meaning to get the movie director, and they get me. And I can't help them with that.
That's funny. Wait, Zach, did I see you tweet about the Lions the other day? Are you a Lions fan?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We're both in Michigan, big Lions fans. So you know, exciting times here in Lions land.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely on the rise, yo. Lions are a great team. I'm rooting for them. They look really good this year.
All aboard. Let's go.
Did you watch the Hard Knocks?
Yes. Yeah, yes. That's great. Awesome stuff.
We got to stay in contact about the NFL. Go Steelers, though.
Okay. Hey, how about a Super Bowl matchup? I'm here.
Let's do it. Well, appreciate you guys and keep up the good work.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.